So we have our guest today, Sarah Lou. How do we actually say your last name?
Louisina.
Okay.
It's a French spelling, and there's a G in there that's silent, so that really messes people up. But Sarah Lou is great.
All right.
Yeah.
Sarah Lou sounds like a maybe a Dr. Seuss character to me.
Yeah. Wendy Lou Who's.
Yeah, that's right. That's
great cousin or something.
So, Sarah, we like to start off our interviews with a pretty simple question, which is, how do you find yourself here in Benzie County?
I got here in Benzie County because a sperm met an egg in Benzie County, and I left for about 25 years. Then I came back, just before COVID, actually, and it was meant to be just a visit, but then we all got locked down, and it was one of the best things that ever happened to me because I belong here, and it was really important for me to remember that. It was really good for my body to come back to the lake specifically and to imprint into the landscape here. Really helped me through some hard times. So I think I'm living the best phase of my life in Benzie County right now.
Right on. Yeah. So your parents are from here for forever.
Yeah, well, my dad grew up in Redmond Township in Detroit, but they always summered up here, and he moved up here. My grandparents moved up here when he was 16, and my mom's family came from here. My mom's dad and mom both came from here, and so she grew up here in Benzie County.
All right.
So I'm at least second generation, potentially third on one side. I'm the founder of a business called The Living Pelvis, and so there's a lot to say about the name and the philosophy behind the work, but essentially I bring folk gynecology to women and help keep alive women's wisdom that we've known for hundreds and thousands of years, but that Western medical model has sort of interceded. And so there's a lot of ways women are not being honored in our Western medical model and traditional, quote, interpretations of gynecology and obstetrics that leave women feeling less empowered, less healthy, traumatized, aren't great outcomes for the babies they're bringing in and for their lifelong full body health. So I have collected lots of different modalities from around the world, and I work with women to help find physiological and reproductive health in ways that empower them and make them feel whole rather than dysfunctional. So I do that through analysis and physiology, and I do that through body work and through coaching. And so I kind of meet each woman where she's at, and she comes in and has an hour-long consultation. So we actually really sit down and talk about the life of her reproductive timeline, talk about trauma, we talk about what happened in her own birth and her birth experiences with her babies, if she's had them, where she's at in her fertility timeline herself, what she's dealing with and why she's in pain. And often there's a lot of information about what's going on with a woman's whole being by looking at what's happening with the reproductive cycle. And that's because women's number one biological imperative is to reproduce, whether women decide to do so or not. That's what our whole bodies are wired for. And so if there are things happening in the rest of the system, you can generally look to the signs and symptoms of the menstrual cycle or the reproductive cycles to deduce what is at the root cause.
Okay.
So that's in a nutshell what I do.
Well, you kind of headed me off at the pass there because I wanted to ask what probably would have sounded like a stupid question, maybe not, which would be, is the focus on reproductive health? And I get exactly what you mean. Like I tend to be reductive when I think about living creatures, where it really all comes back to evolution. Mm-hmm. And what's evolution if not the imperative to reproduce in some sense? So that makes perfect sense to me. That's very cool that you were already right there on my next question.
I am telepathic.
All right. Well, so we're purely ignorant. Not to get into the tropes of sexism, but we gentlemen, gentle as we try to be, are definitely ignorant in terms of our own individual experiences, but also I would say there's probably loads of women out there who are very ignorant to what it is that you have to teach, or discuss.
Sadly.
Where do you start with people? What's 101?
Yeah. Well, I came into this interview thinking I was going to be speaking to the men in the audience more than the women.
Okay.
We're certainly hoping for that.
Okay.
And have mentioned it.
So I'm going to frame it from the perspective of, like, I'm sitting here talking to you guys.
Okay.
I think 101, like the springboard is to, like, you got to get a buy-in. You guys are maybe a captive audience for a beautiful reason. You're interested, but I think a lot of men aren't, and a lot of men have been turned off to understanding. And there are lots of reasons, and I don't want to spend very much time talking about why, patriarchal brainwashing, but the carrot at the end of the stick, like that gets the buy-in, is to understand what you benefit from by understanding how your partner works.
Yeah. What do we risk by ignoring this?
You risk a lot.
Okay.
You risk alienating your partner. You risk alienating your daughter, or daughters. I think a lot of men really do want to be good men and good husbands and good partners and good fathers. And I think that they just don't know how sometimes when women seem so alien. And a lot of that can be explained by biology and understanding hormones and understanding these reproductive tenets that I teach. And it's not really that crazy. If you can buy and sell Bitcoin on an iPhone, like, this is not that complicated. It just takes a little bit of
buy-in.
You just have to care. And the reasons why I think men can care and do care and are beginning to care more and more, there's a tidal wave of interest here, is because I think they see how their lives get impacted by women that don't feel safe around them. And the safety, the security, and the sort of rock in the river is really, I think, what every man strives to be. And when he feels the most whole inside of himself in a relationship, and when he's at odds with his partner or his daughters and he doesn't know why, and he's characterized by them as being fumbling or ignorant or unhelpful or at worst harmful, like, I think that really erodes a man's soul. And I think feminism has done men a disservice in eroding their sense of self and their sense of productivity in society. And there's a big sort of passion in me to reverse that. I think I am devoted to men. I would not be able to be here if it weren't for some very important productions and contributions by men. And I think feminism has had a pendulum swing away from appreciating the men in their communities and in their lives. And there's been a lot of, you know, abuse at the hands of men, and I understand that. And I'm not here to talk about those histories either too much. But I think, like, now where we're at today, we have the capacity to empower men with information, to stand in their power in their relationship, and to give women the devotional energy that they really want to, and to know how to do that. And I think that it can be really, like, reductive and simple and, like, action-oriented, because I think that stuff works great for men. And like, taking care of their women's body is a really great place to start. So do you want me to just keep – I have lots to say.
Well, yeah, you're hitting the ground running for sure, and I'm just kind of nodding along here, which I suppose we need to remind people – or I need to remind myself that the body language isn't there for our audience. But I agree with you in the sense that it's something that gets worse when men feel like they have no understanding and therefore no control.
Yeah.
And it's like, then you just throw your hands up and you go, you know, it's magic. I don't understand it. Maybe get to the point where you feel like you're not supposed to understand it, like it's this mysterious thing, and if you were to ask questions, that would be the wrong thing to do too.
So getting a little bit of baseline understanding and language understanding will help you ask the right questions. Because if you just say something like to your wife, "You must be premenstrual," or "What are you hormonal?" Like, those kinds of questions nowadays are pretty insulting, because there's a lot of information out there. Like, dude, look it up. That's what we're thinking.
I don't think anyone's ever walked away from making a menstrual joke like when the timing was actually accurate and felt like that was a good choice.
No. You know, usually I want to talk about the different wives and the different daughters that you have in one calendar month, because there are four of them, because that's really valuable information. But before I go there, I want to sort of underpin the importance of understanding hormonal biology, because specifically for females and for males, but specifically for females, our hormones dictate a massive cascade. But like, I think most important for men is like our personalities change. It's a personality chemistry. Hormones tell our brains, which tell our bodies to do all kinds of things, like digest our food at certain times and sleep at certain times and wake and shed skin and to hibernate and to, you know, not necessarily for human beings, but other mammals, migrate and when to be fertile. But it also dictates when we, when we feel like tolerant of certain kinds of jokes and questions, and when we don't, or when we feel like inquisitive, or when we feel open to social engagements, and when we don't, or when we feel open to our partner's sexual advances, and when we don't. Like there are waves and cycles to all of this, and it's like pretty easy to understand when you break things down. Like the four seasons. We're in northern Michigan. We're at the 45th parallel. We have four distinct seasons. This is really, I think northern Michigan men are predisposed to understanding women's biology better than anywhere else, at least on this latitude, because we understand the different personalities of the seasons.
We certainly experience them. And that's a good way to look at this. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but go ahead. Mm-hmm. This is wonderful.
Y'all are familiar with the circadian rhythm. That's a 24-hour cycle, and that dictates, our eating and our sleeping and our metabolism. But women are also governed by another rhythm. We obviously are 24-hour cyclical beings, but we are, also governed by a rhythm called the infradian rhythm. And this is a 28-day cycle. It's a lunar cycle. Circadian rhythm is a solar cycle. The sun dictates that. And then the 28-day cycle is a lunar rhythm, and the moon dictates that. And women are tidal just like the oceans. We move. We have waters that move. It's a literal biological movement. The blood waters in our bodies respond to the moon. And so do the hormonal waters. So when you reconcile that women are governed by an entirely different rhythm that men just don't understand physiologically, It explains a lot as to why it's confusing to you. You don't feel it. So you have to use your brain to sort of get it. And there's an action and like an additional step to understanding things that don't necessarily map out in your own biology. So you just get a lot of kudos for trying right off the bat.
So is there such a thing available that could be compared to, I've done a lot of fishing in salt water, and the first piece of information that we want is a tide chart.
Yes. You get a tide chart today.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
And I would guess between one woman and another, her tide chart is going to be a little different.
Kind of. There's some truth to that, and there's some not truth to that, and that's because we are living in very unnatural modern environments, and that are in direct opposition to human biology, specifically female biology. Original peoples, before we started traveling in faster ways than our feet could carry us, before we started inundating our bodies with phytoestrogens and hormone-disrupting chemicals, before we started introducing unnatural lighting, women mostly all cycled together. This is what the concept of the red tent in early biblical
writings. I was going to ask that, having been in a couple of situations where most of the employees were women, mm-hmm. There was this and I guess not a myth, that after a period of time, I don't know how long it takes, that these women who spend 8 or 10 hours a day together have a tendency to, I'm sure there's a...
cycle together.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And that is, so it does happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the original blueprint. And when, sometimes there's a really, women with what I call a wild cycle, a strong wild cycle, an uninterrupted cycle in a group, she can help pull the rest of the group into alignment. Most women have been, quote, domesticated in their hormonal biology by hormonal birth control, hormone replacement therapy, hysterectomy, cesarean, scar tissue, trauma. You know, these are things that affect hormonal biology and can
menopause.
Throw that off. Yeah. Well, menopause isn't an external factor. Menopause is a natural process of the reproductive lifestyle, and I'd love to talk to, like, there's a lot of conversation around menopause these days. In fact, this summer I was on a panel. The state of Michigan did a panel for talking about menopause, and we traveled and toured around the state because there's a lot of interest and understanding, and there's also a lot of pharmaceutical taking advantage of women, understanding that this is a part of their life that they want to try to manage. And, you know, that's another thing. Pharmaceutical intervention is not necessarily helping women, even though in the short term it may seem that way. In the long term, it certainly doesn't. And so that's, anyways, if there is a bunch of women who are cycling normally and haven't been interfered with, which is really rare, I mean, there was a period of time. In some modern Western cultures, it's still dictated by governments that girls go on hormonal birth control as soon as they turn, you know, 14 or 15. It's not that way in the United States, but it might as well be. If you come in to the gynecologist or for your checkup, your first checkup with any kind of symptom, even if it's hormonal acne and doesn't really have anything to do with your menstrual cycle or your sexual proclivity, hormonal birth control is what's prescribed. And there are great documentaries, including one called The Business of Birth Control, that are very enlightening about why this practice is happening. And basically, it's women are a cash cow for big fertility and big medicine. We basically just provide them with lifelong opportunities to make money on our bodies. So that's kind of what
I am. The medicalization of a normal process.
That's correct.
Right?
That's what I'm in opposition to. But that's an interesting observation, David, about women in a workplace.
I always thought that was like a kind of a vulgar sort of sexist myth that women who spend time together sync up, because it would be used as like an excuse to be like, oh, they're all being mean today.
Yeah.
And, you know, something like that.
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of really great, there's observations that men have made, right? And you can go two ways with that. You know, you can gaslight women about it, or you can understand and have empathy. And so my whole point is to like get you to, not you guys specifically, but help men understand why it's to their advantage to not gaslight the women in their lives about that.
Yeah, that whole does he respond to your sexual advances might come into that play. Or why is it that your jaw is so tightly clenched? Say, well, you really are not trying very hard here, mister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gosh, that's an interesting direction to go. I mean, we could talk about libido. We could talk about sexual polarity and how a man takes care of understanding a woman's cycle. You can think of a woman's expression of wellness. I call it a fertility frequency, because when a woman is fertile, she's expressing the highest degree of wellness. Like, fertility will turn off if her environment's too stressful. If, quote, there's a tiger in the garden, if her limbic brain senses danger, she won't ovulate. She won't be fertile. She'll suffer, and in the opposite is true. She's like a mycelium. There's a lot of underground stage happening to provide the perfect scenario for the mushroom to bloom, right? So You know, like that's how you can understand her libido in a way. You got to lay a lot of foundation. You got to hold a strong container of care and devotion and support and understanding before she's like, it's a natural process. Libido and fertility are natural processes that bloom in environments that are hospitable. But in non-hospitable environments, women become frigid and infertile. And, you know, that then there's the men's, you know, suffer from that. And they think, well, she's just being a prude and withholding. But there's so much more that could be done to underpin and undergird those, you know, biological tendencies.
And it dials back to the ultimate goal of reproduction, which I think is neat. Yeah. This is like a kind of a weird parallel, but I learned recently that members of the weasel family, if they live with people, either fully domesticated or just like tame, they will show their babies to the human, and if the human doesn't show enough affection for the babies, they'll starve them.
Oh.
Because it's this system of like, unless there's this perfect environment to raise babies, it's not safe enough.
Right, right. Exactly. That's a great example. Yeah. In some ways, our limbic brains are that simple. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so...
Oh, wait, it's 9:59. Let's do the call sign real quick and take a break.
Okay.
Sorry, Sarah. Don't mean to catch up.
No, it's perfect.
All right. Well, everyone, you are listening to WUWU-LPFM 100.1 Frankfort, Alberta, and this is Pearson Dave on Tuesday morning. It is 9:59, soon to be 10 o'clock, and we have Sarah Lou with us to talk about women's reproductive health. Well, women's health generally, but relating back to reproductive health sort of inevitably.
And educating men.
Educating men on how to better understand it.
To understand more about all of this.
All right. And thank you so much for joining us, Sarah.
My pleasure.
It's already been 30 minutes somehow, but if you want to just keep rolling, we can just keep rolling, or we can take a break and listen to a song, whatever you like.
It's up to me. I'm on fire. Let's go.
Okay, let's go.
I can talk about this all day. I like to say I'm kind of like a Pez machine. You just put a quarter in here, and it just I never run out of things to say. I think it'd be good to get into a little bit of specifics for you guys. Coming back to the seasons and understanding the cycles, and you were asking for tide maps, Dave. You may have seen an image of a woman's 28-day hormone cascade before. There are four different hormones, and they kind of go in these swirly patterns. You don't need to have that in your mind right now. I don't have a visual for the people listening. You can look it up pretty easily, though. But the thing is, like, when you become a sailor, you look at a tide map the first time, you're like, what is all this? You don't know how to read a tide map the first time you look at it. And it's the same way with this hormone map. You got to learn. You got to look at things and understand what they're doing and why and how they affect her personality. So I'll kind of highlight a little bit of those details and give you specifics about what that means. So in the four seasons, we're going to start the season in winter. The first phase of a woman's monthly reproductive cycle is her period. It's when she's bleeding. This is the winter phase. And just like you can think about a bear, just like a bear does in the winter, she dens in and slows down, and her breathing slows down, and her body temperature drops, and she goes quiet and internal. And this is a really, oh my goodness, is this a huge missing piece in Western culture? Women are expected to operate like 24-hour cyclical beings, just like men, to compete in the workplace. You have to just be like men, but we're not. And when women have to go out and produce and get out of their den in the winter season of their cycle, it can, like, that piece alone can send their hormones into a cascade that they never recover from until they stop doing that. And that's enough to make them have very dysregulated menstrual cycles, overall cascades of fatigue. And when women get fatigued and they're expected to produce in any way, then they get irritable and they're difficult. So when women are not protected and given space during this period of their cycle, not only is it really harmful to their health, but it can be harmful to the health of the home. Because women are they're the cycle spiritual hub. They're the ones that hold and maintain the social nervous system of a home and a community. It's how we're wired biologically and socially forever and until time began. Women have been the holders of the community. And so when women are spun out like that, the whole ecosystem of the home suffers. And so in a good woman-centric home, men understand this and can give her a break. Like, take the kids out for the afternoon and let her just be home and bleed. Like, keep things quiet. Try not to, like, turn all those devices that make a bunch of sound down. Give her some quiet, low lighting. Make a meal. Take care of her body in some way. Make an effort to, like, rub her feet. That kind of thing goes a long way during this part of her cycle. Give her permission to rest. Sometimes we just women, especially women with children and young children at home, just have no help, not enough help. And we're biologically wired to have 6 to 1, 6 adults to 1 infant. That's what we have been doing for the mass majority of human evolution until quite recently in the industrial evolution or so. And it's absolutely impossible for a woman to contain all of that responsibility alone, and even with just a partner. So that time, those 6 to 8 days can really set the whole system up for success. It's a whole month up for success if she gets the opportunity to rest and have a winter season. Also, what's really interesting, these jokes about women and their periods that get thrown around about them being, you know, bearish. Now you kind of understand why that is. But what's actually happening biologically is this is the quietest time hormonally for her. All of her hormones kind of come down and sort of land right before menstruation. So this is the time when her left and right hemispheres of her brain are actually really good at connecting and communicating to each other. When she thinks the most clearly, when she sees the most clearly, when she actually understands how she feels the most, when she can see dynamics the clearest. So it's actually, instead of dismissing her in this moment, it's actually really important to listen to her. Her hormones are in a prophetic place. So I think that that's really interesting and very valuable for men to understand. Okay, and then moving on into phase 2, which is the proliferative phase, where her body's starting to proliferate, is proliferating blood lining the uterine cavity. It's proliferating hormones. The hormone cascade starts to ramp up. It's like what happens in the spring. All the spring leeks start popping out, and the new grasses and the mushrooms, and there's this uprising of energy for women, and it's very creative and very inspiring, and it's an amazing time in her cycle if she's a wild cycling woman. So, or estrogen's coming online higher, and she's making her way. Her body's starting to internally select which egg is going to be chosen to be released, and that's a beautiful process. There's a lot of blood being replenished. Her body is working to replace all the blood she just lost. So there's high metabolism activity. She needs to eat a lot in this phase to replenish herself. And she's doing a lot of detoxifying. So that spring energy is really is a really beautiful time. She's bright. She's high. Especially if she rested well, you're going to see like a shining example of your partner or your daughter at this time. She's going to be like the one you love the most. This personality is very attractive to you. Phase 3 is the ovulation phase. This is when her body is fertile and she's in her fertile window. This is like summer. All the flowers are blooming. Boom. It's like the peak, the pinnacle. This is when she's the best and most articulate. She's the best at her social engaging. She can go out and present and be a great leader. She can articulate her thoughts well. She can solve complex problems. She can manage intense logistics without becoming overwhelmed or overburdened by them. She's great for, you know, her sexual energy is high. This is generally if she's having a wild cycle and if she ovulated, it's not a guarantee that she's going to ovulate every month. Like I said earlier, if her brain's thinking there's a tiger in the garden, she may not ovulate. She may have what's called an anovulatory cycle, which is an unfortunate thing because when you don't ovulate, you don't get progesterone. And, you know, I think most of the culture tracks menstruation, but nobody's really tracking ovulation. And while a menstruation is the fifth vital sign, it's just as important as blood pressure and heart rate to understand how a woman's health is doing. Ovulation is the main event. It's really important to know whether she's ovulating, when she's ovulating, and whether or not she's getting progesterone, because progesterone is the hormone that makes her feel safe, secure, and sexy. And these are the things that make a person feel like themselves. And when women aren't ovulating because of hormonal birth control or because of hormonal disruption in the environment or because of trauma, past or present, or just generally like not feeling safe, then she's more anxious. Her memory suffers. She doesn't produce the chemical cascades that help her fight disease. Her bone density suffers. Her arteries get more plaque. She has triglyceride issues. Her thyroid function slows. Her aging ramps up. Her libido drops. She gets migraines. She gets joint inflammation, insomnia. There's a lot of things that progesterone does every month to support her feeling good and healthy in her body. Women's depression rates are really like the rate at which women have been put on hormonal birth control and the rate at which women are then put on antidepressants or maybe around the same time or even just a little bit later in life. Those curves match. And there's a reason for that, is because those women are not getting progesterone. Natural there's no such thing as bioidentical besides what the body makes, but natural progesterone inside. So if you're a man who's really invested in your woman's health, long-term, lifelong health, help her understand if she's ovulating or not. Okay, that's my spiel on ovulation. A really, really fun time of the season. It's the fertile window is relatively short. The egg really only lasts for one day. The fertile window itself is about 5 days where a woman can get pregnant depending on sperm health. So if you are trying to get pregnant, you want to know that. And if you're trying not to get pregnant, you also need to know that so that you can do other things during that time or use a barrier. There are really obvious and easy ways to track whether a woman is ovulating, and those are with cervical mucus and basal body temperature for the women that are listening. Contact me if you don't know how to do that. I love coaching women through understanding their bodies in that way. I'm not expecting the men to track the ovulation. There's no way for you to do that from the outside of her body, but you can support her in figuring that out. And then phase four, the last phase, is the secretion phase. This is when the hormones decline, when the uterine lining begins to thin and gets ready to be released. It's the autumn season. This is when composting, when putting the garden down, when a woman's energy starts to decline. And if this is another like tricky phase of the cycle, it's kind of got two parts. The first part of it's kind of like summer. It's the longest phase. The first part of it's sort of like summer, and the second part of it's more like autumn. And in that second phase of the luteal cycle, the week before her period, this is when the PMS symptoms can happen. And PMS symptoms are not natural. They're common, but they're not natural. It's a sign of dysfunction. It's an important marker to understand what exactly her body needs that she's not getting. And this is part of what I do with my menstrual cycle analysis work with women and girls, to look at the symptoms throughout their whole cycle to help them understand, well, okay, you're not honoring your infradian battery in this way, or there are nutrients you're not getting, or, you know, you're a vegetarian and you really should be getting 80 to 100 grams of protein every day. How in the heck are you even surviving? These things show up in the autumn phase. So ways that men can support women in that phase is to really like think ahead about menstruation coming soon, and like check the social calendar to make sure you're not overbooking each other. Give her extra support in self-care time. So this is a great time for women to do things like sauna, things like detox support with elimination channels. This is an important time for her to do her yoni steaming. This is an important time for her to really make sure she's building her blood so that she can not deplete herself in the menstrual phase, right? And this is when we really are susceptible to things like starvation, artificial light, and stress. Yeah. That's the title map, guys. Did that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. You know what? Another metaphor besides the seasons is it makes me think of cooking a meal.
Mm.
So like phase one is sort of like, because you, like, let's say you cook dinner almost every night. So it has this rhythmicity to it. And then within the rhythmicity is the cycle. And that cycle being, you know, set out the ingredients. Well, first of all, figure out what you're going to cook. Make sure you have the ingredients. Set them out. Prepare the kitchen. Actually cook. Sit down and eat. Then clean up. Like that four-way, it makes more sense to me, I guess, than the seasons for whatever reason.
But, I love that.
Yeah. Okay. So then the takeaways being... how easily do you think most men even notice that that's what they're dealing with?
Yeah, they're not. It just all feels like chaos because they don't have an understanding of a longer map than they're used to. Your guys' map is 24 hours, man. Your hormones are the same every day, pretty much. Boom, 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 boom. Wake up, testosterone rises, and then it drops. That's it. And so, but if you look it out, I don't know how, you know, you guys like to learn. Looking at things visually helps me. It can just take a little bit of time to orient yourself to a longer map.
Do you think it's appropriate for men that are in a, let's call it a stable relationship with a woman over a period of time, that it would make sense not only to know these things from either reading them or hearing them, but to ask.
Yeah.
And then listen. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to ask. You know, we're all very good at questions. And then some of us are better than others at, well, here's the answer. And then the third part of that is, so you've asked the question, you've heard an answer.
Keep a calendar.
You're listening, but what are you going to do proactively to take the information that you've seen or heard, or both, in terms of how you are who you should be to make this not just tolerable, but I think there's an opportunity there for men to turn this into something that they share that goes way beyond, okay, well, it's that week.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a lot there that's sort of exciting to be thrived upon or thrived
That's
upon.
Right. There's a whole nother
but
level.
But you got to buy in.
Yeah.
To get back to that. I'm a hockey coach and you talk to your team about, okay, you may not like the system we have here, however, we all got to buy in.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we can't all get on the bus together.
Yeah. I think
you're going to Toledo.
An obvious buy-in is that I think men are not thriving in their relationships at some point in their cycle. Like there's pain points, innumerable pain points for everybody, and not understanding basic tenets of female biology. Like women have just been expected to be small men. Women haven't even been studied in most like medical research until like the 90s because we're too complicated, quote, because of our hormone cascades. But we're not small men, and like half the population's misunderstood by most institutions and the other half of the population, and pretty much they don't know either. So it's time. It's just we're overdue. And what you were saying, Pierce, is really, I think, the exciting part for me to talk about, like what happens on the other side of the sort of the little bit of a hill climb that you have to understanding is your capacity to be a king for your partner, for your daughters. You know, you get to be the one anticipating her needs and helping her fulfill. Women just don't, like, you could do so little and it could be so huge for her. Like, women don't expect much. We don't get much, you know, just haven't in forever had much support and love. No offense to you guys specifically, but much support in expressing our femininity or being unburdened by the thumb of patriarchy and male dominance. It's been for most of us our entire memory and our ancestral memory, but it wasn't always that way. And when women are thriving, and when women are in their fertile frequency, and when they're soft, and when they're relaxed, and when they're healthy, and when they're happy, the whole house just can levitate off the ground. Everybody gets to see and experience. I don't know if I had ever experienced a woman thriving in my entire life until I started doing this work and figuring out my body and how it had to work. We don't have an example. Women nowadays don't have an example of to look to in their mothers or in their grandmothers and their sisters or aunties of what that looks like. But we're starting to see women reclaim it. And it's a big job. So, you know, just understanding that women are reclaiming pieces of their past and their history and their health against a tidal wave of oppression and ignorance and it's a lot. It's a big job for a woman to reclaim her wild cycle and to sort of take a stand and you know, expressing that. So if you just do the bare minimum of understanding what she's doing, it will go a long way. And then you can go above and beyond. What do you guys think? What could happen if your partners were really doing well?
Well, I like in particular the idea that the spring and the summer seasons of the month are like awesome and can be taken advantage of.
Yeah, you can go have crazy fun adventures.
Yeah. And the other thing that I take away from this that's has me, my brain kind of worrying is it's sort of like thinking of the household as this meta organism.
Yeah.
And it makes me think of when we talked to Eric about like the interconnectivity of the body and the mind mm-hmm. and the fact that you cannot really expect yourself to be of healthy, sound mind if you don't take care of your body, right?
Yeah.
And think about your breathing and think about your posture.
Yeah.
And likewise, the household, it's like, the members of your household are extensions of your body.
Yeah.
In a way. So if you, it's like you're neglecting half your body if you're ignoring this whole other person.
Right.
I think that's a very neat way to think about it anyway. What do you think?
I'm thinking and listening. This is wonderful.
And how I guess the next step probably, I mean, especially for Dave in his personal life, how do we talk about
menopause?
There's still cyclicality to sure. the hormones,
totally.
Right?
Totally. Oh, I love this. Okay. I'm ready to launch.
Okay.
Do we need to do any announcements?
It's 10:21 a.m. We do not need to do any announcements, although sometimes we like to take a break and just listen to a song, take a breath. Does that sound okay?
Yeah. Are we going to be able to listen to the song?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Should I intro it?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. This song is from my dear friend Laurel Primo. It's called Jericho, and it's off of one of her recent albums, Golden Loam, and she's a Northern Michigan savant, and you're going to enjoy this song.
All right. That was Jericho by Thank Laurel you. Primo, and man, I always love a nice acoustic beat like that. That was great. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. All right. So we're back. It's 10:27. We are talking about women's health and what men can do to be better fathers and partners. And to some extent, I assume sons and brothers. Mm. But I think it's enlightening and fascinating, maybe even if there isn't a particular person that you're thinking about in your life, but it's more just this conversation about returning back, as we were talking off air, returning back to more of a natural state of things, a less medicalized lifestyle, and less of, you know, like Eric has mentioned to me a few times how much he hates LED lights and the fact that that screws with men's health plenty, men's and women's health, because of how it messes with your circadian rhythm. So good reminders, all this stuff, to live a little bit more natural life if you can. Back to the way things were for hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of years, instead of everything the way that it is now being so unnatural. Anyway, Sarah, we were going to talk about, I guess, menopause.
Yeah.
And postmenopausal women's health.
Yeah, totally. And David brought up a good point in the break too about food and our relationship with food and therefore our relationship with the earth and how I like to use earth-based analogies because we can't forget them, because they're absolutely 100% relevant. When women get disconnected from the earth and the earth's rhythms, including the light cycles and the vibration of feet on earth walking at a pace that the spirit can keep up with the body in, that's when the top starts spinning out of control. I think everybody can agree, we're at a frenetic pace and it seems like it's just going to get faster, and we have to really get unfortunately people get to pushed against a wall before often they make lifestyle choices that bring them back to their natural rhythms and back to their bodies and back to the earth. And I hate to see that. I hate to see it become a heart attack or a stroke or major reproductive failure that is the catalyst, because we can do something sooner.
And sometimes it's living with like years of chronic low-grade health problems too, right?
Yeah, and not really getting any answers in Western medical systems and just being told that's just how it is to be a woman or anybody.
Yeah.
That's the way it is for women. Oh, yeah, you get you're crumpled on the bathroom floor once a month for 3 days. That's just how it is. That's because Eve ate the apple. No, sorry.
So you mentioned real quick, just for my own clarification, I'm pretty sure I understand this correctly, but just to be certain, you mentioned a wild cycle. So does that just mean not being on any kind of interfering hormones?
Unadulterated, yeah.
Okay.
Which is hard because now they're measuring hormonal birth control in municipal water.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That bums me out.
Yeah, and other pharmaceuticals, and it's in the air, and it's in our food, and
I remember like
inundated, but
when we started talking about it being in like milk, it was like, oh, well, okay, I just won't drink milk, no big deal. But if it's in the water, geez.
That's why the defensemen from Western Canada were always so big and. And at the age of, this was the story, was at the age of 12, and he's got two kids in the car, and he's a second-year Bantam. And the story was is that they all drank whole milk, and it was full of
growth hormones.
Growth hormones from you know, getting the cows to fatten up. And it is, and I did see some evidence of that with a peewee hockey team that we travel with in Canada quite a bit. It was amazing how mature.
The 12-year-old
can be. Does your dad have a milk farm? Anyway,
yeah.
I digress.
But primarily, what we're talking about is birth control, right?
Birth control, and like in the conversation around menopause, hormone replacement therapy is what's now hot. But before I go there, I want to back up and speak to these are lifelong. There are the 28-day cycle that I spent time with, but there's also this lifelong cycle where women go through these different phases of maidenhood, motherhood, sage essence, and crone. And you may have heard of maiden, mother, crone, but there's a new sort of period of perimenopause, or this in-between, just before menopause, the autumn season of a woman's lifelong reproductive season. So that's kind of what I want to talk about next. And to do so, you sort of have to look back, because when women are put on hormonal birth control at age 12 and 13. Their brains aren't fully developed, and what we're doing is tricking their brains to think they're pregnant. That's what that drug does.
Okay.
Puts them into a hormonal freeze inside, basically. Chemical castration.
I was going to say, that sounds so automatically like a terrible, terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea. Okay. Yes, it is. And there's a lot of other things I could say about it. So when women are, by the time they have been through a couple of birth experiences and potentially hospital settings where they're pumped full of natural drugs, where their babies' birthing timelines are messed with and interfered with every step of the way, where they're, you know, told from beginning to end that it's a that it's an illness that they need to be managed instead of a beautiful mm-hmm. biological process that results in a rite of passage for a woman. Women leave their birth experiences traumatized and into postpartum, which is a golden opportunity. There's three golden opportunities in a woman's life where her hormone cascade can be really disrupted for life. And in traditional Chinese medicine, gynecology, there's an essence. It's similar to qi. Qi is sort of the masculine essence, and jing is sort of the feminine essence. And in these three golden opportunities, the jing can be depleted. That's in menarche, postpartum, and perimenopause. So when women are messed with super invasively in these three different periods of their lives, they enter into menopause being very dysregulated. And so the cascades of symptoms we're seeing for perimenopausal and menopausal women in the West don't happen in every culture around the world, although most of them do because most of them have adopted Western, well, most developed nations that are tracking these things have developed Western ways of managing women's health. But a recent study came out, several of them actually, studying rural Mayan women. And I have a strong connection with the rural Mayan culture. I spend time in Mexico and I bring women down there to receive this unbroken lineage of exceptional women's womb care. I have a mentor there that I spend time with, and I'm excited to bring a group of women down in May for a retreat. So keep your ears open, women, if you're interested in receiving this important medicine. That's a living tradition of respecting and understanding and honoring women's bodies. These rural Mayan women have the same kind of estrogen and progesterone hormonal decline as other women in the West do, but they don't have the symptoms. So the big problem in the West right now is that they're equating the hormonal decline of perimenopause and menopause with the symptoms, but that's actually been proven wrong, but they're not catching up. Because it's such a cash cow, it's such a financial boon for these companies to weaponize women's reproductive transitions essentially against them and to sell them, quote, anti-aging hormones basically to make their symptoms seem less bad. But what it's doing is just sort of fattening up the cow before slaughter. So women have at some point a big drop off when they can't take these drugs forever, and these drugs are slowly degrading their bone health and their mental health and preventing them from having a natural age related decline of hormones. And then when they do go off of them, it's like they're being pushed off a cliff and they have what's called like another chemical castration, where they just fall into feeling like they're 70 years old out of nowhere. And it's really unhealthy for lots of reasons. So when I was doing these panels this summer, I was one of the only women on the panel that were willing to talk against hormonal birth control, or excuse me, hormonal replacement therapy, because it is giving women a sense of relief. And because the event was sponsored by drug companies also. And there's, like I said, a lot of money here. And so I don't want to say that, well, if you were put on hormonal birth control at age 12, and if you had highly medicalized managed births, and if you went on hormonal replacement therapy and perimenopause, that you're guaranteed to have a terrible experience in menopause. But because you can wean yourself off, you can detoxify, you can heal, you can get your diet correct. You can do, there's a lot of things you can do to make your transitions easier on you, but they're by that point, we're dealing with consequences.
Yeah, it's not great news.
Yeah.
Just stem the bleeding.
Yes. This is a big reason why I'm really passionate about working with young girls to help educate their mothers to push back against their medical providers who want to put them on these drugs. I really am passionate about working with women in preconception to help bolster their bodies and their strength before they get pregnant so that they have physiological health going into pregnancy so that they can stand up against the wave of tyranny that's happening in the birth world too. And the same thing with perimenopausal women.
I learned a little bit about, I had a girlfriend for a while who wanted to become a midwife and a doula. And I found the whole conversation fascinating. So mm-hmm. I was kind of learning along with her. And the medicalization of the birthing process was just like traumatically horrible to learn about. In particular, the way that epidurals and like kind of inevitably, but drastically increase the rate of cesarean sections because of the fact that it's essentially halted the normal processes. Right.
Right.
But there were so many other examples of little things like that where mm-hmm. it was like the doctor wanted to go home. And so it was like, all right, it's time. We're doing this.
Yep.
Rather than like this needs to happen the way it's going to happen. There was no appreciation for allowing it to be this natural process. And instead it was hyper-medicalized. And I just found learning about that to be like really, really eye-opening, but such a bummer.
Seriously, because the trauma that a child goes through at their birth is the hardest and most deeply wired trauma of their entire life.
Right. Nothing bad's ever happened. This is the first thing that's ever happened to
you. That's right. Yeah. And here so you we're are. Setting them up for disassociation and dissociative tendencies, for psychopathy, you know, that seems like a big word to throw out there, but when, especially young.
Well, like attachment males, styles, right?
Yeah. When they're not going through their own physiological process of being squeezed and being able to emerge in a safe, relaxed, peaceful way when they're being yanked out by I could talk about this aspect of this conversation. I mean, I was a doula for 10 years and I wanted to be a midwife and I got traumatized myself just being a birth attendant and realized how little control that I had to support my birthing mother, and realized also, like, as a practicing medical midwife, licensed midwife, how even sometimes less control that you have.
Yeah, you're going to get muscled around.
That's right. Yeah. Or get threatened to lose your license, and then all of the. Yeah. But this isn't how it always was, and it's not how it always will be. And I feel like I have a real bee in my bonnet about helping us as a culture remember how it has been and how it could still be again. And one day we will look back at the way we medically manage women's reproductive lives to the detriment of the whole human population and psyche, and we'll be like, wow, that was a barbaric period of our human history. And let's stop doing that.
The upsetting thing among many upsetting things about it is that it's so upside down, right? Because science is supposed to be the solution to problems like this, not the reason.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, I always want to ask this question, like, how do you avoid people treating you like you're just a crazy hippie?
Me?
Like, yeah.
Well, I just have.
Or how do you combat that protection. Stereotype, I guess?
I don't care.
Okay.
We don't think that, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can see it. Of course that happens.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. People tell me I'm dangerous all the time.
Yeah, because you're anti-medicine.
I'm not. I'm actually not. I think that there are instances where a medical birth is going to save the life of the mother and the baby, but not at a 1/3 cesarean rate.
Right. Yeah.
That's atrocious.
That's a convenience.
Right.
It's an absolute convenience. It's the most popular surgery on females in the West. Cesarean is second most popular surgery or hysterectomies. Both completely unnecessary, but are chosen because there's fear tactics and fear mongering and all kinds of intervention beforehand.
Are they related in any way?
Oh, yeah, sure, for sure. When women have, here I could talk about the physiology of this. I could talk about the spirituality of this. There's a lot of the emotional piece. When women have cesareans, there's six or seven layers of tissue that are cut across their abdomen, almost all the way across their abdomen. And when those tissues heal, the scar tissue that builds disconnects their upper half of their body from the lower half of their body, essentially, which means that they can't energetically and biomechanically ground into the earth to feel safe. It means that their reproductive and digestive organs aren't functioning well because they're all bound up by tons of layers of scar tissue. It means the polarity in their body is screwy. It means that they have trauma locked up that they can't necessarily access until they start moving that tissue, which is one of the big pieces of my work. I help women with their cesarean scars. I work that tissue back open. And when we do that, when we get through the layering and the armoring, and like not only is it scar tissue from the physiological process, but it's literal emotional armoring and spiritual armoring, because it is an assault to their very nature. Being in the birthing portal is one of the most spiritually open, the thinnest veil between this world and the next. We don't understand any of this in science and in the Western hospital. There's no reverence for this spiritual connection of a soul coming through. So when women have to be soft and open to let that process happen, and they get slammed shut by trauma, there's so much going on there in their physical bodies that that then just builds and builds and builds. If they never come to me for my abdominal womb massage, for example, or if they never go for pelvic floor physical therapy, or if they never talk to their counselors about what happened or never acknowledge their birth traumas, they enter into their perimenopause and menopause time of life, and they're bound up, and it's dysfunctional, and they have often the only recommendation that's given to them is to cut that uterus out. Cut out the organ, that's the problem. That's all we're... And then what happens when you cut an organ out, a vital organ out of your body? Women's uteruses and ovaries are creating estrogen for their entire lives. It's not a dumb and dead organ at any point in her life.
Yeah.
And then there's a hole. There's a dead space, an open cavern. There's nowhere in the body where there's a hole like that. The body doesn't do that. And so other organs fall into that hole, things prolapse, fall out of the body. It's a cascade of problems. So
another convenience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Make them less
and it
volatile.
And it pays.
Oh, it's very, very good. Yes, yes, that's true.
So I'd like to change gears just a tiny bit.
Great.
And let you shed light on the business of, we've talked about the medical, the world, which is very disappointing, but the glimmer's there, is this business of supplements and the onslaught of ads that claim that things that we eat or rub on our face or whatever, supplements, to assist or dampen, I'll let you fill in the words, the adverbs. But it's a big business,
mm-hmm.
This vitamin, this herb, that herb, and it's all, you know, mushrooms this and cauliflower that. And I'll toss that one to you.
It's a wild west. It's the wild west out there. It's a big topic.
And it's the wild west because as supplements, they're not regulated by the FDA because it's not a food item. So it's wide open.
Yeah. Well, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I mean, plants. We've been using plants for millennia. Women have been using plants to heal everything for millennia, and the FDA doesn't have a right to tell us whether they're useful or not. But when things are extracted out of their whole food form and turned into a pill that we don't know the potency really, or we don't even realize how much of that. But here's the thing, like you take an apple a day keeps the doctor away, for example, is an adage we've heard all our lives. And you know, science has the capacity to break down what properties or what minerals or what vitamins in that apple are actually the active ingredient, quote, active ingredient that keeps human health high. So then they take those active ingredients and isolate them out, reproduce them chemically, make them chemically, and then sell that. That's the kind of racket that I have a problem with. But understanding that a whole food form of a vitamin or supplement to heal is a whole mastery of which I don't possess. But I will speak to something that I do have a deep care about, and this may be a not what you asked for, David, but our iodine levels are in catastrophically depleted states across the board, humans in general, but for women, this is a huge, huge problem. We can't eat iodine in an outside source anymore as easily as we once could. But medicine people, pouches they found in archaeological sites across the world, medicine men had seaweed in their pouches because of the importance of iodine. But now all of our iodine is radiated because of Fukushima, and I wouldn't eat, I wouldn't be able to eat enough iodine from just seaweed sources anyways. A study happened and kind of scared everybody away from iodine. But iodine is one of the, if I'm going to freak out about any supplement that I think anybody who's having negative health problems around their reproductive cycle, specifically women, it would be iodine. And the reason is because we can live for 3 minutes without oxygen and then we die. But we can live for 1 minute without iodine and then we die. It's absolutely imperative that we have high enough iodine levels. And FDA recommendations are like staggeringly low. It's embarrassing. Almost like 150 to 300 mcg per day is like what the recommended daily dose is. But I suggest women with reproductive issues take upwards of 30,000 mcg per day, making a slow transition into getting their body's levels up, for example. And it's even higher if they're pregnant or breastfeeding. And when we don't have it, our thyroid can't function. And this is like at the heart of why a lot of people's bodies are having, specifically women, are having hormonal problems. It's not just women, but because iodine is a volatile halide, it's the least secure of the halides. And we got bromine, chloride, and fluoride, and then iodine. And all those other three are toxic halides, and they displace the iodine in our body. Well, what do we see in our environment? Everybody's fluorinating their water. We have chlorinated pools, and we're spraying bromine on all of our furniture and on forest fires, and it's completely poisoning everybody from this toxic halide perspective and displacing all of our iodine. And we don't have enough iodine. Thyroids can't function, brains can't function, babies are born, low IQ, short umbilical cords. These things are accelerating birth traumas. It's a huge, big conversation, but if we're talking about supplements, the only thing I care to talk about right now, at least, is iodine.
And how would one consume iodine?
Yeah, I have
suggested.
So we have a source of ancient seabed mined iodine. So this is old iodine. This is before we started playing around with nuclear power and nuclear bombs. And this iodine comes in a tincture form that is suspended in 100% organic grain alcohol. And it's at very high, like one drop is 400 mcg. It's a product that I feel very good recommending. I'm not so great, not so excited about Lugol's products because they have a lot of other additives and aren't when you encapsulate them, they're not, you can't tell how potent they are. There's no way to measure the iodine because it releases over time. Same with salt, iodized salt. You can't tell when whatever iodine consistency there was at the manufacturer, it's by the time it gets to the shelf, by the time it gets to your grocery cart, by the time it gets to your house, by the time it gets into your body, it's really unknown how much iodine's in there. So that's my recommendation.
Yeah. So let's say you're planning a menu and you want to add iodine to the fare. How would you do that?
To eat food. That's what I was saying. Like the highest source of iodine historically has been with seaweed, which is why the iodine I recommend is in ancient seabed salts, because the seaweed is in.
Let's say you have Pink's Himalayan sea salt.
Well,
do any of the salts that we would add to food fill the bill? No.
No, no.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, not.
So it's a tricky
thing. And neither does the seaweed.
Yeah, so it's sort of
because it's been irradiated.
It's been irradiated, and you'd have to eat with the levels of our depletion and our current like bromine poisoning. We'd have to pretty much eat like handfuls of seaweed all day.
So for the average person to avail themselves of an iodine in their system,
you need the tincture.
Got to get the iodine in your body. Yeah, there are great products out there, and there are sub great products out there. Any iodine, get any kind of iodine in your body at higher levels than basically what the USDA recommends. Like, I like prenatal vitamins sometimes, and sometimes they don't have any iodine in them, and sometimes they do, and it's only, like I said, 150, because that's what the FDA recommendations are. So if you're doing it like following the government, good luck.
Why do you think the FDA recommendation is so off?
Well, there was a study that has been like later debunked that freaked everybody out about iodine. So they stopped iodizing the salt. They stopped iodizing the bread. They started using bromine instead. But I'm saying this on public air right now. I have conspiracy theories that this was a nefariously sourced study, and that the government actually wants everybody to be pretty sick so that they can continue to be consumers, and that iodine depletion is a pretty easy way to do it.
Okay.
Especially for northern landlocked places like us. If you're living at the coast in a warm area where iodine is kind of coming off the sea air all the time, their iodine levels are higher than they are in the Midwest, but not and probably you could, if somebody wanted to do a study, they could see. I bet you ovarian cancer and breast cancer levels are lower on the coastlines. Thyroid issues, hypothyroid issues, hypothyroid issues are lower at the coastlines than they are Midwest, but I don't know that anybody's doing that study. They should.
I think this might be our first conspiracy theory.
I wrote an essay about this. I wrote an essay also on my Substack called The She-Wolf Pack about, there's a two-part essay about how to love a cyclical woman, directly for the gentlemen in the crowd who want to have some of this to read, and some of my quote protocols on how to support your partner. It's all written out there.
So would you remind us and our listeners again how they can access this information and contact you if they choose to?
Yeah. So my Substack is an online writing platform. Maybe people know about it, but Substack.com. / the She-Wolf Pack. That's where my writing is. And my website is thelivingpelvis.com. And I have an office, and I see clients in Traverse City and Beulah.
All right.
Happy to field any questions and specific inquiries.
Well,
we wish we had another couple of hours. In fact, I see Matt's shiny, lovely face over here. Maybe.
Hi, Sarah.
Yeah, that's Sarah. Anyway. This has been illuminating is far short of what this is.
It's a lot. Lots of process.
What we hope really is this is episode one.
Happy
of
to
this
come
conversation
back.
Because there's so much more to talk about and understand and shed light on for such a serious topic. Half the planet are women, and as men, we have fallen behind in understanding the what, the why, the where, and the when, and what can we do. And that is a terrific lesson to share.
I mean, the beauty of it is it took care of itself for a really long time, right?
Yeah.
So returning to a closer state of nature, mm-hmm. or well, communal nature, not like from the Leviathan, that state of nature. We don't want that, but the version where we're nice to each other. That's not so hard. That's not so hard to wrap our heads around. And of course, it's just it doesn't take much to be empathetic to somebody that's in your life. That I mean, I imagine this is not easily done from the man's perspective if the woman isn't aware of all this as well. So it's a team effort, and
you got to buy in.
Got to buy in. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sarah.
Thank you, gentlemen.